Daniel chapter 1. So, isn't Mike Pence such a jerk? Isn't Mike Pence just a big jerk? This is what many people would have us believe after it was revealed last year that the vice president will not dine alone with women who are not his wife or attend events without her when alcohol is being served. Now, let me just make sure you're with me. I'm not calling him a jerk, okay? Just kind of trying to get your attention, and I could tell I got some of your attention, okay? So it was revealed last year that the vice president, Mike Pence, had this rule. He would not dine alone with a woman who was not his wife. He would not attend parties where alcohol was being served if his wife was not there. And when this happened, the collective internet basically lost its mind over these revelations. Because apparently that means that Mike Pence hates women. And the reaction was so strong that almost every news outlet devoted attention to it. Let me just give you a couple examples. People magazine ran an entire montage of Twitter reactions talking about how terrible it was that he would do something like this. The Atlantic ran multiple pieces on the news, including one with the simple headline, "How Mike Pence's refusing to eat with women hurts women." And then the Washington Post had a piece with the sentence, "We're all shocked," in the headline, and so on and so forth. In today's world, it seems like there isn't anything that anyone can do that won't get some kind of pushback. Now, I don't know how you feel about the vice president having this rule. I'll be honest, I think it's kind of cool. I think it's neat that this has come out about someone that is in the position that he's in. And the reason that I think it's neat is because I think it demonstrates what is important to Mike Pence. And so some questions came out in some of the articles that were out there. We've actually talked about this when it first happened in our teen class a little bit. But some of the questions that come out were, well, is he do this because he can't control himself around women? Does he do this because his wife can't trust him? Does he have this rule because he's afraid of what he might do? And I'm not sure exactly how he would answer any of those questions, but I think, to me, the answer to those questions is he is trying to make sure that he stays above reproach. He's trying to make sure that he doesn't do something that looks questionable. And man, wouldn't it be awesome if we had safeguards, if we had boundaries, if we did these kinds of things in all areas of our life. And so that reality of what he was doing came to mind as these network morning shows debated and picked apart Mike Pence after his personal rules for one-on-one dinners with members of the opposite sex came to light. Now, there's another example I thought about mentioning, and I'll just cover it briefly, okay? Because you might feel differently about this one. And this is a pretty famous football player, and his name's Colin Kaepernick. Now, he has received a lot of fame for protesting racial injustice, and the way that he protested it, some people celebrated, some people it bothered, and I don't want to get into any of that. One thing I do want to point out is just this past month, the NFL came out and they have changed some of their rules based on him doing this, saying that if you kneel during the national anthem, even if in protest, you will be fined. And then in addition to that, this football player, based on his stance, based on his protest and what he is doing, he doesn't have a job. And many people believe it's because of the stance that he has on kneeling and protesting during the national anthem. And whether you agree or disagree in the way that he has protested, I do think I can respect the fact that someone is willing to basically sacrifice their career for something that they believe in. I think any of us can see something where you do something like that, and you might disagree with why they're doing it, or you might agree with why they're doing it. But the fact that you're doing it, even though there might be some big sacrifice that comes along with it, I think deserves some respect. How many of us, when it comes to doing something and there being tremendous sacrifice, maybe we might lose our job, maybe we might lose credibility, maybe people might respect us less, maybe people might look at us differently based on a decision that we make to stand out in front of people, how many of us are willing to make those decisions? You probably have people that you know, friends that you know, who have done things and you kind of scratched your head why they did them. I had this friend who was a little bit older than me at the last church that I was at. His name was Darren. And I remember as a high school student, he would help out with the youth group. And Darren was just different. Some people would use the word weird, okay? He was a little weird. But as I grew up and as I loved him as a kid, and mainly because sometimes he acted like a kid a little bit. But as I got older, as an adult, and then being a youth minister at that church, and Darren would still help out with the youth group, I began to really appreciate Darren. And something I realized about Darren is Darren did not care what other people thought about him. All Darren cared about was young people coming to know Jesus. And so because of that, he was willing to do things that maybe other people wouldn't have been willing to do. He was willing to act silly and act goofy and be funny. And some people looked at that and thought, man, this guy's weird. But I look at Darren and I see someone that's willing to stand out because of his love for God. In Daniel chapter 1, we get some young men, some teenagers, who have to make a decision if they are going to stand out. A little background on what's going on here. King Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon, he destroys Jerusalem, he burns the temple, he destroys the city, he humiliates God's people by taking faith symbols from the temple. And then 605 BC, he decides he wants to take some of these best young future leaders and then intentionally indoctrinate them into Babylonian culture and train them to become these future government leaders. And we see, as we talked about this morning, that Daniel ends up becoming one of these leaders, but he still holds firm to his faith in God. That's much later in his life when he's in his 80s. Here, he's a very young man. So in Daniel chapter 1, if you're there, Daniel chapter 1, starting in verse 3. Then the king ordered the chief of his court officials to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. So the idea here is we're going to take these young men and we are going to change the way that they think. We're going to change and train the way that they behave. We're going to train and change the way that they believe. And in some ways, this is kind of this full-scale attack on these young men to convince them to live and act differently. And for us, I think one of the things that we see as we're about to see the decisions that they make is we cannot passively be Christians in the world that we live in. If you would, kind of hold your finger in place there in Daniel chapter 1, and then flip over to Ephesians chapter 6 for just a minute. Ephesians chapter 6. Here we get this pretty well-known passage. Maybe you remember it from a vacation Bible school, but it's actually got some pretty adult theme to it. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11 through 13, it says this: "Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand." See, there is a very real spiritual war going on. And sometimes I think we walk around with our heads down and we are unaware of this spiritual battle that's happening. Another passage real quick, John 10:10 goes along the same idea. It says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." You have an enemy and he hates you. And we need to recognize that there is a real battle, a real enemy. And this battle is for our souls. And this Ephesians 6 passage addresses this. And one of the things that it repeats three times just in the three verses that we read is the importance of taking your stand, of standing out against this very real spiritual battle that's going on. This morning I told the story about Houston getting sick, and I had someone afterwards that I didn't know very well, and they said, "Oh, your son's Houston. That's kind of an interesting name." And so we were talking about that, and I mentioned that my wife really wanted to name him Houston, and she kind of sold me on it by saying, "Hey, when he gets in trouble, we can say, 'Houston, we have a problem.'" And I said, I'm sold on it. That sounds great. And when it comes to names, and I've talked about this a little bit before, our firstborn son, Ethan, I didn't care so much what his first name was, but I was really passionate about his middle name. I really wanted his middle name to be Danger, because I thought, First of all, middle name's kind of pointless, I've always felt like, except for graduations. It's the only time you hear them, right? But I wanted his middle name to be Danger because how cool it would be if a tricky situation comes up and he's around friends and be like, guys, it's okay. Danger is my middle name. Like, I thought that would be awesome if he could do that. My wife said no, okay? And so we used a family name instead, but it's fine. We'll only hear it at graduation. But as I've thought about that over the years, as funny as it would be to have his middle name be Danger, right? As maybe cool as that would be, and man, it would have been cool, okay, if it could have done that. I'm still upset. Do I really want him to find himself in dangerous situations? Of course not, right? Nobody wants their child to go into danger. We want to protect them from danger. We want to shield them from danger. We want to keep them as far away from danger as possible. But the truth is that we can't do that. Danger is all around us constantly. Sometimes it's physical danger. Sometimes it's unavoidable things that happen because we live in a broken world. But the other danger that's going on is this very real spiritual battle for our souls, for our children's souls, for everyone that we care about and come into contact with. There is a war going on, a spiritual war. And we must recognize that. And we must be willing to stand out against it. And maybe that makes us look a little different than other people. Maybe we stand out against the spiritual war that's happening, and maybe people look at us and they think, well, man, they're weird. Maybe there's sacrifice involved in it. Maybe we have to give something up because we've decided to take a stand against some of the enemy's schemes against us. Go back, if you would, to Daniel chapter 1. Let's continue and see how Daniel approaches what's happening. What they're trying to do is they're trying to change Daniel. They're trying to change the way that he thinks and behaves and believes. And so one of the things that they do is they try to give them new names. If you remember this part of the story, verse 6 and 7, it says, among these were some from Judah, talking about the boys that they had taken from Jerusalem. Were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. So we got four boys, many believe probably in the age range of 12 to 15 years or so. They've been uprooted from their family. They're over 1,000 miles from home. And now, in addition to that, they have been stripped of their identity. Your name, okay? We are taking your name. You are no longer that name anymore. Here is your new name. And the name that they had before, each of their four names had to do with Yahweh God, the one true God. But now it's a different God that their name reflects. And so what they're doing in Babylon is they're trying to crush any sense of dignity by taking their identity that was found in God. So they changed their names. Next thing they're going to do is they're going to change their diet, right? They want them to eat the food prepared for the king. And they want them to eat meat and wine that's dedicated to pagan gods. And this is where Daniel seems to draw the line and say, nope, we're not going to do that. Verse 8 of chapter 1. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. He is resolved not to defile himself. Man, I wish we had that type of resolve. And I want you to notice what it is that he said, I'm not going to do. Okay, he didn't fight when their names were taken. I mean, those were just outward labels. Daniel and the other guys, they knew who they were. You can change my name. That's fine. You can call me whatever you want to call me, but I know who I am. He didn't defend his name, but he did take a stand when it was God's name that would be defamed. And that's what was happening. By eating food, by eating anything that was offered to a pagan god, you are defiling the name of the one true God. And Daniel said, nope, we can't do that. We're not going to be doing that. Not eating food dedicated to pagan gods. Now, if you're Daniel in that situation, man, you could have easily rationalized this. But as we talked about this morning, that's not who Daniel is. He doesn't rationalize things. He doesn't make compromises. You could have said in this instance, you could have said, listen, God will understand. Everybody else is doing it. It's not really hurting anyone to eat this food. We have to eat. We have to eat something, right? We're not just going to starve. And so there would be a way to rationalize this behavior. And I'm afraid sometimes we do that. We rationalize behavior in order to fit in with those surrounding us. And that is a mistake. For Daniel, before he found himself in the situation, just like with the lion's den, before he got to this point, Daniel, I believe, had made a predetermined resolution. He had decided he was not, this is where he was going to draw the line. He was not going to do this. For us, if you are going to stand out for God, you have to make some decisions ahead of time. Right? You have to decide, okay, I'm not going to have sex until I get married. I'm not going to get drunk. I'm not going to laugh at inappropriate things. I'm not going to get caught up in materialism. I am going to spend time with God. I am going to go to church and make being a part of a church family a priority for my family. I am going to keep my eyes pure. You have to make these decisions before finding yourself in a situation where you have to make that decision. So it looks like a one-time event, what Daniel is doing. But really what it is, it's a daily lived decision. A lived daily decision that he's making. Day after day, him making this decision too, this would have had to have stood out, right? This decision to not eat this food. Every time they have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it would be noticeable that Daniel and these three other guys are living differently. And it wasn't just a public show. Really, it's a bold display. And people will notice it. People were going to notice the way that Daniel and these three guys were going to stand out. But they were okay with that. Continuing on, verse 12 through 15. It says, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. So instead of just making a public protest, Daniel honors authority. He created a plan, right? I think there is a way to stand out in the wrong way, but Daniel doesn't seem to do that. The way that he approaches this, I think, is an important thing. And then a little bit later in verse 19, we see the result of this. So the king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And so they entered the king's service. They found none equal. Now, as we wrap this up, if Daniel and his buddies, if they had simply blended in, what would have happened? I mean, I think nothing really historic would have happened. We definitely wouldn't have this particular story. If they had decided to just stubbornly refuse to eat, just put your foot down, we're not going to eat, what would happen? I mean, their point would have been made. They likely would have been executed, okay? But the way that they stood out respectfully, right? The way that they stood out and demonstrated their faith in the one true God seems to have worked. Time and again, we are going to be lured to blend in. We're going to be lured into the trap to just look like everybody else. That's not just a high school thing, okay? That is an adult thing too. This temptation, this trap, just to fit in and make my Facebook feed look like everybody else's Facebook feed. Here's pictures of my family just like their family. Look how happy we are, right? This is a temptation that each of us has to just look like everybody else. We'll be lured into the idea that we just need to blend in, or we can take a stand and stand out. I think we would rather be remembered for standing out than forgotten for blending in. I think we should take a stand, like we're told in Ephesians 6, take a stand against the devil's schemes. We need to put on the full armor of God so when the day of evil comes, you can stand. Like Daniel, we need to pre-decide before we ever find ourselves in a time where we have to make a decision. We need to pre-decide what it is that we're going to do. And maybe that decision happens for you tonight. Tonight, maybe you need to decide to follow Jesus and to give your life to him. Maybe you needed to make the decision to be baptized and have the blood of Jesus Christ wash away your sin. Maybe a decision you need to make tonight is, I haven't been making the right decisions in the past, and I want to change that. If you come forward tonight on a Sunday night, listen, you're going to stand out a little bit. But as we see, that's an okay thing. In fact, I think that's a thing to celebrate when someone stands out, especially if it's for restoration, especially if it's because you need some sort of prayer or encouragement in your life tonight. We want to make that happen. However we can help you, however we can encourage you, won't you come now as together we stand and sing.